This coming Tuesday, July 4th, will be a national holiday when these United States observes a day when the citizens of 13 United States of America declared their independence from Great Britain. This was done on July 4th, 1776. In comparison to the history of mankind, that's not so many years ago, really. It only has been 241 years. I can remember the 200th anniversary in 1976. That was the day my family moved into our current home. So I can remember that day. Daniel Webster has been quoted for saying, "History is God's providence in human affairs." Winston Churchill, who was the Prime Minister of Great Britain during its darkest hours of World War II, is quoted and to have said, quote, "The farther backward you can look, the farther forward you are likely to see," end quote. Or as Patrick Henry said, quote, "I know no way of judging the future but by the past," end of quote. So that is what we will do today. We'll take a look back on how this nation, the United States of America, has come to be. So later we'll be able to look into the future. There will be information today that I've gleaned from the American Heritage series and historian by David Barton, which is available in our church library on DVD. You can find that back there. American Heritage Series. Wonderful. Also from a book titled The Mystery of the Shemitah by Jonathan Cahan. That is where some of this information comes from for today. Where do we start when looking back? Would it be when the Mayflower came to anchor at Cape Cod in November of 1620? Maybe we can start with Columbus and his crew when they landed on the 12th of October, 1492. Now, the nation of Canada, they observe their Thanksgiving Day when they observe Columbus Day. Columbus Day in Canada is when they observe their Thanksgiving. But we're going way back in man's history. And it brings me to the title for this message, A Promise Kept. The title, A Promise Kept. America is a result of a promise kept by God when He made the covenant relationship with Abraham. And the world has been blessed because of this covenant that God made with Abraham. So let's go back to Genesis, the book of beginnings. And we'll look at Genesis chapter 17. And we're beginning in verse 1. And we'll read about the promise that we find here. Genesis 17 and verse 1 through 7. When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said to him, "I am Almighty God. Walk before me and be blameless. And I will make my covenant between me and you, and will multiply you exceedingly." So right here, he starts mentioning the covenant, that he's going to multiply Abraham's seed. Then Abram fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, "As for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father of many nations. No longer shall your name be Abram, but your name shall be Abraham. For I have made you a father of many nations." So here we see a promise to Abraham. "I'll make you exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of you, and kings shall come from you. And I will establish my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you and their generations for an everlasting covenant to be God to you and your descendants after you. See, this covenant was just not to Abraham. It was going to be to his descendants as well. Verse 19, same chapter. Then God said to Abraham, he says, Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant and with his descendants after him. So it's repeated once again. God is saying with regards to this covenant. Let's once again take a look at Genesis chapter 22 and beginning in verse 15 through 18. This is after Abraham had taken Isaac up, was willing to offer him as a sacrifice. And the angel says to him, verse 15, Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, By myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. Blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. So here, because of Abraham's obedience, once again, and God mentions the covenant that he makes here with Abraham and his descendants. Let's continue reading with regard to this covenant over in Genesis 28 and verse 14. Where we find the promise, the covenant, reconfirmed once again. Chapter 28, verse 14, this is to Jacob. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and south. And in you, in your seed, all the families of the earth will be blessed. Indication here as to Ephraim and Manasseh, how the British Empire would spread around the earth. And then finally, over here in Genesis 48. And we'll begin in verse 14. Genesis 48 and verse 14, where Jacob blesses the sons of Joseph, we read here. Then Israel stretched out his right hand, and it laid on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, and guided his hands knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Let my name be named upon them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac. And let them grow into a multitude, into the midst of the earth. Now when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. So he took hold of his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, Not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. So a reference here that would be Ephraim, the British Commonwealth. Verse 20, So he blessed them that day, saying, By you Israel will bless, saying, May God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And thus he set Ephraim before Manasseh. So we see this covenant that God made with Abraham was passed on down through his descendants. Have you ever stopped to think what this world would be if God had never made the covenant with Abraham? What would the world have been like? you know, the history of mankind may read as it was pre-flood. When, as it says in Genesis 6, and verse 5 through 6, every intent of the heart to do evil was done by everyone. Everyone was doing what was right in their own eyes. End up being a world where might makes right. If God would not have made that covenant with Abraham. What we know as the Old Testament is the English word translated from the Greek word covenant. So then when we talk about the Old Testament, it's actually the covenant that God made with Abraham. These terms of the covenant were God's terms. This is what God said. And so what do we have here in the Old Testament? Is it not the recording of Abraham's and his descendants' history? That's what the Old Testament is. It's a recording of the history of Abraham and his descendants. There's prophecy events that have already been fulfilled, and yet there's prophecies there that have yet to be fulfilled. And prophecy is the proof of the Bible is the Word of God. If you would, let's turn over to Isaiah chapter 46, 9 through 10. Isaiah 46, 9 through 10. Where God says, declaring the end from the beginning, and from ancient times things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. So it is God that fulfilled prophecy, declaring the end from the beginning. As I mentioned, the Old Testament has the history of Abraham's descendants, Israelites. Now, other peoples on earth are not mentioned. Areas of Asia, Africa, South America, North American Indians. They're only mentioned as they come in contact with the descendants of Abraham. That is what we find in the Old Testament. Thinking some more along the lines, what would have happened if this covenant hadn't taken place with what we saw at the end of World War II? Could have been very much different if God was not involved with the Israelites that we know. At the end of World War II, the United States became what is known as the greatest single nation that has ever existed. The world recognized it at the end of World War II. Once again, promise kept that God kept to Abraham. So let's go back to our history lesson here with regards to events here in America. Knowing about the descendants, their name, the early settlers of the Massachusetts Bay Colony believed that they were a new Israelite nation. They represented the Hebrew people. They believed that when they came to America. You know, we have mountains and cities in America named after mountains in Israel. We have Mount Gilead. There's Mount Hermon. We have Mount Ephraim. We have Mount Carmel. Cities, nations in America carried the name. When people come over, they named their children Rachel, Ezra, Jeremiah, Jacob. They came to the United States ready to populate the nation, but they carried those names from Israel. Back in the lineage of my father, you can find the name Jacob every once in a while as a middle name, Jacob. Reference back, which brings me to the thought of my wife, the Russians. My wife has the feminine of her father's name for a middle name. That's how they keep track in Russia of the family. The middle name is the father's name. So we can see people coming to America, Israelitish in name. Did you know that Hebrew was taught in the schools and universities in the early days of this nation? It was taught as a language in schools and universities. Yale University seal has the Hebrew words from the breastplate of the high priest. And the seal of Yale University, Urim and Thummim, which means revelation and truth, or lights and perfections. That's on the seal of Yale University. And it has to do with making judgmental decisions. Maybe there's some reason why so many lawyers come out of Yale. They have to learn to make judgmental decisions. The seal on Columbia University from 1755 has the ancient Hebrew name for God on the seal, Jehovah. That's on the seal. The ark across the top of this seal is Psalm 36, verse 9, which reads, "For with thee is the foundation of life, in thy light shall we see light." That's Psalm 36, verse 9. And that provides for the model for the University of Columbia, which is, "In the light we shall see light." I believe that was mentioned in the sermonette about the light. The light comes from God. The seal of Dartmouth College has the Hebrew words, when translated, to be the Almighty God. Benjamin Franklin proposed the nation's great seal should be Moses parting the Red Sea, while Thomas Jefferson proposed that of the Israelites journeying through the wilderness. Either founding fathers and settlers of this nation knew their Israelitish background. They knew where they were coming from. Seeing how we'll be observing July 4th, Independence Day, I thought I would read the introduction to the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Notice, they recognize a God. We can see how God was there when they talk about equal rights, considered equal. Now, where do we think the drafters of the Declaration of Independence got these ideas that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator, if it was not from the Bible? Probably mostly from the book of the law or the Torah, the first five books. How prevalent is that, equal rights? Well, for example, in the February 2017 National Geographic issue, they had an article in there about widows around the world. There's about 259 million widows in the world. Nearly half are in poverty with no protection. When their husband dies, the property goes back to his family. She has no property rights. Some areas of the world, she does not even retain the children. The children are taken away from her and to her husband's family. In some areas of the world, when the husband dies, the woman has to shave her head because, you see, her hair did not belong to her. She belonged to her husband. But if you look at the map that the National Geographic has, you will see those nations that where the widow has no protection or very little are nations where we do not find the descendants of Abraham on that map. You don't not define the descendants of Abraham. So where maybe did that come? Rights for a woman, property rights? Well, how about Numbers 27? You can write that down, look that up later. Numbers chapter 27. This is when five sisters come to Moses because their father had died. And he didn't have any sons. So what about the inheritance? Well, Moses didn't know, so he went to inquire of God. And God does tell Moses, those five daughters are right. They do have a right to inheritance. And we can see how much the influence is of Abraham's descendants on the world. Now, in the Declaration of Independence, there are 27 grievances against King George III. If you look through the Declaration of Independence, a number of them are listed there. Probably most of you may recall it was the tax, you know, the tea tax and everything, but there were 26 more. And the tax is just one little small line when you read it. So I want to conclude here now with the conclusion of the Declaration of Independence, where the signers agreed to, and this is what they said. We therefore, the representatives of the United States of America and General Congress, assembled appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies solemnly publish and declare that these United States are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown and all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain, is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as a free and independent state, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract, alliances, establish commerce, and do the other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor. So they were not afraid to make reference to God in forming this Declaration of Independence. So it seems like the founding families of America, they knew their identity and whom their blessings come from. Just want to bring you a little history of one of the signers, Edward Rutledge, standing at the far right. Far right over there, there's the Declaration of Independence on the wall. Edward Rutledge, standing on the far right, was the youngest signer at the age of 26. and he was from South Carolina. Later, he would be captured by the British with the fall of Charleston in 1780, and a year later released in a prisoner exchange. But the Declaration of Independence was only the beginning document that would show God's influence in the United States becoming great. A promise kept. To fulfill the promise, this nation would need a constitution. The Constitution took time to come together. It was not signed until September 17, 1787, at Independence Hall in Philadelphia, the same hall as the Declaration of Independence. So if you look at the hall there at the Constitution, and there, it's the same hall where they were both signed. As they were working on the Constitution, they've been on it for 4 months. They just didn't seem to be able to bring it together. While the 55 delegates were there in Philadelphia to write the Constitution, after 4 months of struggling, they came to a point of disagreement over an issue. I'm not quite sure what the issue was. I was able to find that. And discouragement settled in with the delegates, and many were going to give up and go back home to their various states at that time. They did come to an agreement, though, to take a 3-day break and come back together. What did they do in that 3-day break? They went to church and prayed and listened to a sermon. After 3 days, they came back together and the Constitution came together. Many of the delegates knew God, or as many referred to as Providence, had intervened. A number of the delegates called it a miracle. They had seen it take place. We must, when you go back and look at our nation's history, you can see that God has been involved in this nation. He still is involved in this nation. Not a thing that God doesn't know. He's fulfilling his promise, the covenant that he made with Abraham. And he is aware of everything that's going on in this nation. Let's take a look at the first president, George Washington. He was the only president who's ever been elected unanimously. You know, known as the father of our nation. He took the oath of office April 30th, 1789. This is roughly 2 months shy of being 13 years after the Declaration of Independence took place. Now, where did he take the oath of office? Washington, D.C.? Nope. Washington, D.C. did not exist back then, in 1789. He took the oath in New York City on the steps of the Federal Hall building. That building is still there today. And it's not too far from the Twin Towers, where the Twin Towers stood, that came down September 11th, 2001. And when the Twin Towers come down, the shock wave of the towers collapsing cracked some of the foundation of that Federal Hall building. It's interesting why that happened. But that's another sermon coming down the road, as they say. Why that took place. George Washington, as I mentioned, took his oath of office there on the steps of the Federal Hall. With his hand on the Bible, And he added the following words at the end of the oath. It wasn't required to say it, but at the end of the oath he said, "So help me God." Those were his own words. Then it is said he kissed the Bible. I'd like to read now parts of his inaugural speech that he gave. Excerpts from it. Quote, "Such being the impressions under which I have, in obedience to the public summons, repaired to the present station, it would be particularly improper to omit in this first official act my fervent supplications to that almighty being who rules over the universe, who presides in the councils of nations, and those provincial aids can supply every human defect, that his benediction may concentrate to the liberties and happiness of the people of the United States. A government instituted by themselves for these essential purposes and may enable every instrument employed in its administration to execute with success the functions allocated to his charge. In tendering this homage to the great author of every public and private good, I assure myself that it expresses your sentiments not less than my own, nor those of my fellow citizens at large less than either. No people can be bound to knowledge and adore the invisible hand which conducts affairs of men more than the people of the United States. Every step by which they have advanced to the character of an independent nation seems to have been distinguished by some token of providential agency. And in an important revolution just accomplished in the system of their united government, the tranquil deliberations and voluntary consent of so many distant communities from which the event has resulted cannot be compared with the means by which most governments have been established, and without some return of pious gratitude, along with a humbled anticipation of the future blessings which the past seems to presage." End of quote of that part. Is there any doubt in your mind that George Washington was not a man of God? Understood God, believed in God, knew that God had intervened in the beginning of this nation. Another part of his speech where he says, quote, "The propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right which heaven itself has ordained." What's he saying? He's saying a nation has to observe God's laws if we want to be blessed, to have God smile on us. A nation must observe. What was the first act of Congress as President Washington led Congress? The first act, it was convened. The president and the members of Congress walked over to St. Paul's Chapel. From the, if you look where the federal building was, Federal Hall, they walked over to St. Paul's Chapel. Now you may wonder where St. Paul's Chapel is. You remember 9/11 when the towers come down. And you see this chapel right nearby where the towers come down. That's St. Paul's Chapel. Just a little heads up on the future sermon. That chapel was not damaged that day the towers come down. But they walked over there and they had a service, a prayer and a sermon, a blessing. That's what George Washington and Congress did. That was their first act, was to go to the chapel. And after that, then you know, they broke, their session was over. But they understood God. So as we observe now July 4th as Independence, let us remember it as a promise kept. God's promise, His covenant to Abraham and his descendants. The founding fathers knew where the blessing come from. We've seen the evidence today. This nation. And for us, one of the blessings of our individual calling by God the Father is we have been given the privilege to understand the prophesied fulfillment of many prophecies. I hope today you can see how much God's involved in this nation. And the prophecies that are there in His Word regarding this nation yet would have taken place. And the next time I'll go into more of that. How God has His prophets warning this nation what is to take place. So next time then, we will, as Winston Churchill said, because of looking farther back, the farther forward you are likely to see. Because we've looked back today, all the way back to this covenant relationship that God made with Abraham. Now we'll be able to look forward next time, hopefully. All this is possible by promise kept.